This is Whitney.
And this is Hysterical Women,
the podcast that no one asked for about our thoughts about gender in our society.
Each week, we're going to dissect events, macro
and micro, to determine if we think this week was a win
or a loss for feminism.
I think that you're wearing a tank top and I'm wearing a sweater.
Are you in air conditioning?
Kind of. Are you not?
Well, we have a fan in our room, but I'm not. Because this is really good audio quality always, I decided to turn off the fan, which means that I might start visibly sweating, but like, that's artistic.
Yeah, and hopefully the audience can hear
the
suffering that went into making this art.
Or at least I'll add some later, like layer in some just like drip, drip, drip. Also, a fun thing about this shirt is that sometimes it just like falls off a little.
Well, when we got on it first, I think one of the straps had fallen off and I was like, oh, it's like an off the shoulder, but like strappy, which is kind of uncommon. Like, I feel like usually if it's an off the shoulder, it's like either a thicker strap or like a full sleeve or something. Yesterday, I found this thing on TikTok where you like your shirt and you like tuck it in. So it's an off the shoulder. And John was like, did you learn how to do that on TikTok? And I was like, yeah, I sure did.
Sometimes you ever just exhaust your computer by having like 400 documents up. Now I can't hear you. This is the audio opportunity experience that people are running to podcast applications for. We might be in the same place next week. It's a cookie. It's a cookie. It's a cookie. We're going to make cookies maybe.
Oh, I like that idea.
Yeah, when I see you, I'll just be like, cookie. I don't know what I'll do when I see you. I'm scared I'm going to cry, actually. Like, I just don't know. I think quarantine's really, like, opened up, like, some things in my body. That sounds healthy. But just, like, where, you know, like, emotion, like, really, it just cracks open so much easier. The walls of the egg of me have really become thinner in a good way, I think.
Yeah, I like that for both of us.
One time an acting coach was like, I was like doing a scene and I was sobbing and he was like, don't be afraid of your vulnerability. And I'm like, I'm so scared of this. But it was like, you know, when they're like, don't cry, like keep it in because that's like more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It was just all coming out.
There's just like sobbing, not. And just like everywhere. And they're like, that's what the camera wants.
They were like, that's not what the camera wants. But that was an incredible take. Let's go again.
Makeup? Can we take a check on Nora?
It was like just a class. So there really was no makeup, but they like brought someone in. They were like, this is too bad for me.
That's beautiful. And, I'm looking forward to that joyful, maybe tearful reunion.
Yes.
Just for your information, it like just dawned on me that we normally do questions. Yeah.
It just dawned on you, like for the first time ever. We've done honestly too many of these, but actually that's okay. You don't have to have a question because I kind of have two.
Okay. Let's hear yours.
And my questions are bad too, so... First question, do you think that the secret of 2020 actually is in Britney Spears' Instagrams?
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
Or what's the alternative? I just don't really see there being an alternative to that.
I know, because you like look at them and you're like, what? I hope for anyone who hasn't, just like if Instagram's accessible to you, get on there. Really give yourself the time.
Give yourself the gift of enjoying these performances. Do you have a favorite one?
I love when she's like, this is just a freestyle. I just think the vulnerability of her telling us that this one, opposed to the others, is not choreographed is... It's amazing. I'm not a dancer. I don't know, but it just, oh, I love when she's in front of the kind of photography area and like showing us different outfits. Yeah. I can't say that I'm like I want the answers to be in there. I don't know if there are, but I do know that I cannot look away.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really one of those like car crash rubbernecking. Have you ever heard of rubbernecking? One time this girl said it and she just said it as if everyone knows what it was. So it's like the idea that when you drive past something, you like can't help but turn back to look at it, like if there's a car accident. And so she's like, yeah, she like called someone a rubbernecker. And I was like, what? Like, anyway, but it's always stayed with me. And I feel like that applies to this moment. My personal favorite of Britney's videos, current videos, is the one where her florist made an arrangement for her. And she just, have you seen this one?
Yeah.
She just keeps walking.
I saw it yesterday.
She starts out of frame. She walks into frame. She looks at the camera. She walks back out of frame. She walks back into frame. She looks at the camera. She walks back out. Like, it's literally just a minute of her walking in and out of the frame and staring at the camera.
And you think that the flowers are going to be kind of like more of a part of it because that was kind of like the impetus. But like what she's teaching us is that we can be inspired by anything and that can then turn into anything.
Yeah. And like I even thought because she and I think she said she's like because it matches my outfits. So I was like, oh, she's going to change and wear different tops that match all the flowers. No, it's just the one yellow top. And I just got this vibe that she was just looking back and being like, I look incredible every single time. And I was like, to have that confidence. I also saw this like breakdown. Someone has made a video series detailing Britney Spears' social media over the last like 6 years. And turns out it actually hasn't gotten that much weirder. It's gotten more frequent, but not that much weirder. So
we'll see what happens.
I have another question, or do we just want to dive right in? The other question is not that. It can be added later.
I just like want to know the other question at least.
Oh, the other question is, what's the best and worst mail or DM you've received today?
I want to know your answer to that.
Okay, so I got a cute email from the ACLU being like, SCOTUS just ruled in favor of Trump on birth control coverage. I just got an email for that. And I was like,
great.
Rock and roll, rock and roll. That just sucks. In my opinion, that sucks. But then on the Hysterical Women page, thingy thing, we got a message from Heather, and she was like, just thought of you guys when I saw this, and it's the, like, the tweet that's going around. Is it a meme? It's a tweet. We're back to, like, me not really knowing what's a meme or a tweet, but it's Kanye's announcement is a great reminder that men look at job descriptions and think, hey, I'm not remotely qualified, but I think I could do that. Apply for that job, women. So apply for those jobs. I mean, is Kanye the... Like, I think Trump also equally unqualified. But equally. We're just seeing more and more.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just can't imagine having the hubris. Like, what our nation could accomplish if all women had that kind of confidence?
I don't know. I'm going to try to manifest it a little because I'm always like, oh, I only have, like, 3 out of 10 skills of that skills. But I'm just gonna dive in.
I love that. Should we dive in?
Yeah, let's dive in.
Let's dive in. Also, based on my research, not my research for the podcast, but when I was looking at your Instagram story, I was like, oh, I'm pretty sure we have the same topic. So I have a couple of extra things, but now I'll just maybe be able to talk about your topics. And that's all.
For once, we can eloquently have a conversation. Do you want to start?
Sure. Okay. So first off, I feel like the context of this is actually not important or interesting, and yet I'm going to share anyway that I swear I have unsubscribed to Variety magazine 4 times at least, and yet these giant magazines show up on my doorstep 2 to 4 times a week. When I got home, I had like my doormat had just kept them all in like a Fresh Direct bag, and it literally weighed like 30 pounds of just these magazines. And I just was like, I'm just gonna recycle these. But regardless, they came, they come. And I had, there were two articles in this that I thought were interesting and worth noting. So the first one is, so this is in Variety, and it's mentorship programs inch female directors towards parity. And it talks about how the way that directors get jobs, a lot of the time they are given their first opportunity in some way. And a lot of the times it is some sort of like shadowing or mentorship program or whatever. And how actually these are not the most helpful because people don't think to rehire those people. So it's like this, then a lot of women directors are getting into this position where they get their first credit because they like shadowed. So that's like their first credit. And then people don't think to rehire them. And like this, so this article interviews Nicole Castle, who's an executive director and producer on HBO's Watchmen. And she just kind of talks about how a lot of, so they'll bring on a woman to be like a shadow director and to come and have this like mentorship initiative or whatever. And then when they go to hire directors, they'll like in the meetings, they'll be like, well, what about this one woman? She shadowed us. And the vibe is like, well, if she's still shadowing, then she's probably not that good. And she's probably not ready. And she's probably not fast. And so they're looking over a lot of people. So this article is just kind of talking about how most of the time, the hardest thing is actually to get your second job, because there are initiatives to get you your first job. But then it's like, until you have your second job, you don't really have like a foot in the door. And so I just thought that was like really frustrating. That's like all these people, and I'm sure that a lot of women directors are way more aware of this than I have been, but just that like there are these initiatives that are helping, but it's not really ending up in like more hires. But it does say that half of all first time hires in the last, so all of these stats also are from last TV season, since this season is just like, well, actually nothing's happening. But nearly half of all the first-time hires in 2018-2019 were women, which was up 10% from the year before. So that's good. Okay. And then also in 2017-2018, there were 1 in 4 directors were women, and now it's up to 31%. So it's like a little higher, like a full 6 points higher. So this was kind of, I don't know, I just thought it was an interesting read and kind of like, yeah, it's like kind of working, but it like very slowly. And so just the importance of like hiring women in a second director role and how important that is. But I also, there's this article.
I feel like on a bad day, I would be like 1 in 4 to 30%. That's amazing. You know, like not for you, and you're like, oh, that's 5. That's 5%. Yeah, also like maybe we either like make the fellowship programs like more vital so that they're actually getting the experience, so like a second director hire feels more reasonable. But it's also like we just have to get out of the mindset that it's like they're not ready enough.
Yeah.
Like they're gonna do it.
Right. And also I feel like with TV where it's like there are so many people in place that will, like, it's such a team effort that it's like, I'm not saying directors don't matter, obviously, and they're like at the helm of a project, but it's like there are so many people to like pick up for slack if there is slack. And I'm sure that there's slack on men directed sets. And so I don't know, I just think it's all a little bit cuckoo bananas. Yeah, but then there's also this article about how this latest television season that's like in streaming is really textualizing teen girls on TV in a really positive way, and how most of the time teenage girls are either like a sexual object for older men, or they're thought of like the butt of a joke and just kind of the like dumb teenager who like doesn't get like really have a full, I don't know, opinion, a worldview and things like that. And so this just kind of talks about some of the shows that have been like really bringing teen girls to light in a really like dimensional way. And I didn't realize, have you watched The Great on Hulu?
No, but Tessa loves it.
Yeah, I'm sure it's great. It's one of those things that I'm like, I'm sure that's very well made. It's like not my favorite genre, but like I mad respect for it. I didn't realize, though, that Elle Fanning produces it and she stars in it. And she's like so young. And I just thought that was so cool. And then there's also this talks about on Freeform, everything's going to be okay. Also, Jeremy, Little Fires Everywhere, Sex Education, Euphoria, like all of these shows, Betty. So just like all of these shows that are showing teenage girls in like a really powerful and dimensional way that hasn't really been happening a lot. And I was like, that's awesome. And I'm sure that a couple of those mentioned, you know, like Little Fires Everywhere. I don't know a lot about all of these projects, but are like, I know Little Fires Everywhere was helmed by women. So that makes sense why they're like, oh, actually the teenagers can be interesting. Teenage girls can be interesting and not just like bimbos and like
it's sexual. Like, 'cause we were interesting.
Right.
Teenage girls. Oh, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Huh. Did they say anything about the new Babysitters Club?
They did not. No.
I just like so loved the books. Were they books? There was a movie. Yeah. There are books. And I'm just like, we will see. No, I'm just kidding. I'm excited.
You said like such a high bar. You're like, okay, maybe.
That and Stargirl, I'm just like, these are books that were actually very important to me as a girl. And no one asked me to make them. So they better be really awesome.
I was actually with you when you realized that Stargirl had already been optioned and was being made. And you were so sad. And I was just like, oh no, Nora's gonna cry. You didn't, and so I still haven't seen you cry. So
no, I'm excited to see Stargirl. I just felt like I understood that book, you know, like so many other young, you know, how so many other kids felt like they connected to Stargirl.
Has it come out yet?
I don't know.
We don't know. We abandoned it. We boycotted it because they didn't hire Nora.
That's not our platform. I just want everyone to know that's not.
That's my personal platform. I speak for myself. So yeah, some interesting thoughts in the television world. That's all.
I love TV.
Yeah.
I just think it's so good.
I finally am trying to finish The Morning Show, which I don't know if we've ever gone on the record saying that we're mad about it because our show is better and was written before it. But it's fine. That's how I feel personally. I'll speak for myself in saying that. If anyone affiliated with The Morning Show wants to fight me on it, really, I just want your autograph. But happy to fight you on that.
If you want
to
hire me, this is Nora.
Yeah, hire Nora and then get her job at Stargirl.
Get her a job at Stargirl. It's a movie, it's over. I just need to let it go.
Maybe you could adapt it to a series.
Maybe when I'm 60 years old, we can make a remake.
Yeah, and it'll be like A Star Is Born, except it's Stargirl, so it's better.
Yeah, and Lady Gaga plays Stargirl
in her 70s.
And then there's an article that's like, Nora K. Lady Gaga really reinventing what a teenage girl can be.
But by then, it's like old news, because it's just like, yeah, we do whatever we want, and everyone plays whatever, and everything is fair, right?
And everything is fair, God willing. If she's up there, okay. My one of my macros or whatever, this is the thing that I decided to talk about today. The New York Times is doing this, I think is cool, these 7 inequalities. I think they kind of do this type of form, but they were looking at a week-long look at biases women face. Only the first has come out yet, but if you're interested, go check it out. I feel like the world, unfortunately, obviously it took too long, but there's been an awakening to looking at systemic and institutionalized racism and kind of like unearthing that, which about time. But this felt like also in that same scope of looking at like institutions and systemic problems, like how women, and you know about these like hypothetically, but then to just kind of like start unweaving them and being like, oh, so in the healthcare system, like, how does that manifest? And like in technology, how does that manifest? And so I thought it was cool that they were kind of looking at all of these different kind of like facets of the world to look at the inequalities of women. So like the first one written by Emma Goldberg was like A World Made for Men. And it was talking about how like, and we talked about this kind of with science and on a lot of different platforms that I felt like this is a good kind of like holistic looking at it, holistic analysis, a holistic analysis. She's a scholar. But it was just talking about how like this like hypothetical like 150-pound, 5'10", often male person is the like default person in medicine, in like car safety tests. And yeah, you're like, oh, yeah. And then they found that because like, it's like the crash dummy is like based off a default, this default man, that women involved in crashes are like 47% more likely to be seriously injured and like 17% more likely to die. Or like, because there aren't as many women in tech, that when they were like creating the Apple Watch, a bunch of like, they had niche tracking options for like copper or selenium intake, but like adding a period tracker took until 2015, looking at how it's this default man is like what we've used as the benchmark. And I think that we're in these conversations about like racism in America, we're also finding that it's often like a white male. They talked about race and how like Black and brown women are definitely like increasingly disadvantaged in these like inequalities, which I think is something we just like perpetually need to remember. It's like having this default man be the center, and then also just not having enough women in the rooms, so that even if there's like a bunch of like woke or quote unquote woke men, they just aren't thinking about women because like that's not their point of view or experience, which it's like we can try to expand their horizons and knowledge, but also we can just like bring more people to the table and like diversify that table. Oh, and like specifically like for the COVID pandemic, I thought it was interesting that there was like a lot of different technologies coming out that were like, oh, maybe this is like a medicine, or maybe this is like something that could combat it. But many things in medicine in general get shelved because they like might positively affect women, but they don't, because they don't positively affect men. And they're kind of usually the first, like the centralized people that they're looking at in like medical testing, that the other ones like get pushed to the side. And I was just like, dang.
That's a nightmare.
that's just like kind of a nightmare. Oh, and then it was another terrifying facet was that they were looking at like the algorithms that like a lot of science and tech is based on. She says as basically the CEO of computers. And but they were, it like, it had this program, this software program, like complete the statement, like men is to computer programmer as women is to X. And the program responded homemaker. And I was like, oh no, it's in everything. It's in the water. Don't drink the water. And of course, yeah. So, and that was just day one. So
that's a bummer.
That's a wicked bummer. Even though like we conceptually know a lot of these things, like there's a lot of like systemic and institutionalized sexism, but then to just be like breaking it down, like with specific points, you're like, oh, wow, wow.
Yeah. That's bad. I came across an article this week as well that talks about, I've talked about this before, but this was on The Guardian, and the headline is, it took years to get diagnosed. These women were not listened to. And just about how, like, there's this one woman who was having like insane pain and like at the doctor at the hospital, they're like, oh, you definitely had an ectopic pregnancy. And she's like, I actually haven't had sex in a year. So like, that's not true. And they like, just wouldn't believe her. And also, and to your point, there also are like so many more disparities in healthcare for Black women, as specifically not being listened to. And like, there are like the numbers, like the maternal mortality and injury rates are higher by like 3 or 4 times. And like, infertility rates, like access to fertility care, like all of those, it's all so much worse for Black women. And but I just thought that this was just so interesting, and like the just how women are repeatedly reporting on like macro and micro levels of just like being denied healthcare and not being able to like get the, like basically just being told, no, like you're crazy, take some Advil for these like things. But and unfortunately a lot of these things are not even being studied, so like, and don't have the funding to, so like there are a lot of things I feel like that women are experiencing that like there aren't answers for, because no one's, they don't have the funding to like do research on them. So yeah, it's a bummer.
But like, I'm happy that the conversation of like racism in health, like systemic racism in healthcare, is like definitely, I feel like, in more people's brains and mouths. And I think that like systemic sexism in healthcare, I mean, as we've been talking about, I think that it's just like people are going to become more aware, and then there's going to have to be some like institutional changes.
And yeah. And one thing that I learned from reading more about, like, it was just someone's kind of like online, like not a journal, but like someone's like an opinion piece, I guess, about their experience, her experience as a Black woman trying to get healthcare. Something I learned from her was that doctors actually, if like you can request, if they deny you certain healthcare, you can like request that they write that in their chart. And a lot of the time that will make them like, at like, I feel like it kind of just gives doctors this like, okay, she actually knows her rights, and like maybe isn't someone I can just brush off as being dramatic, which I thought was helpful. I mean, I think I've shared on this podcast before about how one time I went on this like wild goose chase because my birth control was making me so insane. And I feel like I had to go to like 5 different doctors before I found someone who finally listened to me. And I'm like, it was a privilege that I had healthcare and could do that, and like had options. But yeah, I think like just the more we can know those kinds of like rights that are available to us, the more empowered we can be in making those decisions and having those interactions.
Yeah. And having like the confidence to know your body. Cause mm-hmm. I think really easy. Like I'm like the doctor's office, as much as it can be so helpful, it also is like another form of authority. And so I think for a lot of people, myself included, sometimes you're like, yeah, no, I'm totally fine. And it's like, no, you're not fine. And you actually are the number one specialist on your body, you know? And you know what hurts, and like make them listen.
And I think it's like, I mean, I know that not everyone is in always a position to do this, but like, I really do feel very strongly about finding a healthcare provider who is that, who does listen to you. Like I, now John and I have the same, like we use the same, just like general practitioner doctor, but because she was finally like the first person to really like listen. And I seriously, you know, have like slight paranoia about like illnesses. And I feel like every year when I like go in for a physical, I'm like, okay, there's this thing I'm stressed about and this and this. And like, instead of dismissing me, she just will like go through them all with me and like takes it very seriously. I think she's an amazing doctor. And I think that if you're able to find someone who out there like that for you, then it's worth looking for.
And even if you can't, and you just have to go to the city MD, which I did yesterday, because you can get a free COVID test, everyone, just so you know, I had one woman doctor and one assistant, and they were incredible and listened to me too. So they're out there.
They're out there. They are. Gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
Is it my turn?
Yeah.
Okay. So Noor, first off, if you have things to jump in and add to this, please do. I feel like I got a lot of this information from Instagram that I don't have in front of me. And I honestly thought this is going to be your topic and I could just be yes and it. But so if you haven't been aware, there are new proposed asylum regulations and that are like very limiting to who can come into the country of seeking asylum. And it's, there are a lot of bad stipulations. Like if you had a layover, you can't come. If someone had like threatened your life ever before, you can't come. And they're pretty bad. And if you can take some time to call some senators about that, that's important.
They also have a, we can link it in the show notes, but there's also the Federal Register Asylum, and you can go and like before, you have to do it before July 15th. So go. But you can make a statement saying that these asylum rules are bogus, and we can link that in the show notes, as well as Unidocs PDX, who has a really great Google Doc to help you write that comment if you're anxious about having all the legal words.
Amazing. Like, yeah.
Like I don't have the legal words and it's helping me.
But I think like we've seen time and time again is like with these, anytime that we're like limiting marginalized people, it always ends up affecting women more. And so this article on Lawfare's new proposed asylum regulations would endanger women's lives, which obviously both, but this specifically was talking about how, so essentially if you've been a target of abuse, you can't come to the United States seeking asylum. And which makes literally no sense, but it specifically talks about how like what this would include is that if a woman is seeking asylum from rape, female genital mutilation, forced child marriage, human trafficking, severe domestic violence, they're not able to seek asylum in the United States. This proposed change would affect women so much more because women are more susceptible to being victims of violence and persecution. So yeah, it's a bummer. Take the time to go on that link. Write your reps, whatever we need to find. I mean, it's just the whole thing is very upsetting and hopefully will not go through because it really is just enabling abusers and not protecting those who are victims of violence, which is mostly women.
It was really troubling, like reading just how blatantly it is like just trying to not help protect people, which is like what asylum is for.
Okay, this is not related at all to this specifically, but I was just thinking about how like things like this are so confusing and so convoluted, and a lot of things in law are, and a lot of things with our with like, I don't know, just our government in general, it feels like there's such a barrier to understanding it most of the time that a lot of things end up being changed that we don't really even know about. Like, I feel like most people probably wouldn't even know about this, like asylum change, because it's so confusing.
Yeah.
And I feel like I am excited to see what social media does for, I mean, there are so many ways that it's been really problematic for government and for movements and things like that. But I also think that it's been, I don't know, like this was something that I learned about for the first time because someone made an infographic and put it on Instagram. And I feel like hopefully social media can be used to make what's happening in our law more digestible for people to be like, oh, that's not something I agree with. And then finding the avenues to stand up and use their voices against it. I am just hopeful that like in the long term, social media will make us all more aware and kind of take off the barrier of entry.
I'm always like, I'm always so baffled that I am some forefront of law and intellectual understanding of law. I'm a comedian, but how do we find out when these things are like coming out or like happening, or the language is so dense that, yeah, if someone hadn't like created an infographic with like all these bullet points being like they're trying to stop people like here, I wouldn't have known how to, like, it wouldn't have been accessible to me. And I don't know if that's how a lot of people are feeling. But yeah, I also think that we need to either make law more accessible or like figure out, I mean, the Instagram is doing it, but figuring out ways that we can, these are laws passed by our country, in theory for, I mean, it's like in regards to us, you know, civilians. So we should know how to interact with that language.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and especially when it's like being voted upon by people who supposedly represent us.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I know
that was a tangent from all of that, but.
And that was our anti-government tangent. That was just a little quick thing where we say, hey, wait, we don't like that at all.
Oh, do you have a last one?
Yeah. July 4th was Saturday. Here's me again being like, Saturday is in this week, barely. But Saturday was July 4th. We know. Obviously, there's a lot more, as we are all becoming more aware, a celebration of the Independence Day of America when not everyone is free holds more than it probably once did when I was like, yay, fireworks. But there are two ladies that I wanted to highlight. The Frederick Douglass quote, I don't know, or like his speech. There was like a lot of cool compilation videos that I feel like were celebrating his words this 4th of July. There was one where some of his ancestors read his words, which was really cool. My mom sent it to me and she's like, this is very powerful. Both of us just cry a lot. But then Stevie Ellum on Instagram shared a post that like, yes, every July 4th, Independence Day, people are talking about Frederick Douglass, but a lot of people don't mention Anna Murray Douglass, who is his first wife,
yes.
Who was a free woman, and like using her sewing gifts and funds, he was able to escape. And then she like ran their household for 44 years so that like Frederick Douglass could go off and help with so much of the abolition things that we now know that he did. But she was like, no one's talking about Anna Marie Douglass. And then she died and then he remarried a white woman. And it's like, we need to remember her and celebrate her. And she helped create the foundation that he was able to like do any of his work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's poop when we don't remember. And I think, I don't know, I feel like we're having these conversations where like Black women are so often being not given like the respect or the attention or the like national news coverage, you know, that this feels like a manifestation of it, but we can now know more about her and know her name. And then this is less like right tying into July 4th, but I mean, we are all living on land of indigenous people, me right here, Canarsie Lenape land. But the federal judge ordered that the Dakota Access Pipeline be shut down, which is awesome, which is what like, it was associated with Standing Rock. And it was one of the many injustices that capitalist America was trying to inflict on indigenous lands, but that was not passed. And so in reading about like the Dakota Access Pipeline being shut down, I learned about LaDonna Brave Bull Allard, who's an elder of the Standing Rock Lakota tribe. And I just loved this quote from her. We need a better system in America. We need as Native people not to be invisible in our own lands. And the federal judge feels like first step, there's a lot of steps that need to be taken, but she's so cool. And I can't wait to like read more about her. When you find out that there are so many more cool people that you need to pay attention to, it's overwhelming and awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just like, oh, there's actually a lot of people that are doing like really amazing things and I've never heard of any of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're like, heck, what am I doing?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I wanted to highlight a couple of artists one I'm pretty sure you already highlighted, but I wanted to share a
always an article that highlight. I found. Just like, you know, re-highlight until that little page is like, did you ever highlight too hard and rip through the page?
Yes. Also when you like highlight and the paper is like the ink moves.
Oh yeah, that's so bad. Have you ever fallen asleep with the highlighter? It's all over your sheet.
No, I can't say I've done that.
Highlighters.
I've done that with a pen.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a bummer.
We're studious. We're just always writing little notes.
The pen is mightier than the sword.
The sword.
Yeah, well, you highlighted Michaela Cole, correct, with her show, which I did not watch.
Are we going to talk more about her?
Well, I mean, just this one article that I, and like I said, I haven't seen her show, but this made me want, I don't know. To be honest, I'm not sure that it's a show that I can handle right now, a show about assault. I'm just like, that's pretty heavy for me at the moment. But I would love to check it out and support her. But my friend Lale sent me this BuzzFeed article that I don't think we've talked about this, and if we have, forgive me, but that she originally was offered a $1 million deal with Netflix for this that she turned down because they weren't going to give her the rights to it. And this is for her show, I May Destroy You. And she, I don't know, the article is like, it's just like, yeah, she actually knew her self-worth and realized she like deserved more from that. And this article is kind of poorly written, to be honest, but it like doesn't exactly say who she was talking to, but Michaela said, or there's this quote that she was on the call with Netflix and she's like, can I get 5%? And they're like, we just don't do that, like we're not doing it. And she's like, okay, well then I'm gonna leave. And that the executive, who it doesn't say who it was, but it says it was a woman, was like, I just want you to know I'm really proud of you and you're doing the right thing, and then had to hang up. And like wasn't able to offer her the money. But I was just like, that's so cool. And she ended up finding the deal with BBC and HBO. So, but I just thought that was an awesome story. And so check her out. I'll do my best to check her out on a day that I'm feeling optimistic about my life. And
can I?
Yeah.
Not to poop on the BuzzFeed article, there's a Vulture article, which I think is probably what it was pulled from.
This is like one of those articles that's like, where it's like based on a Vulture article, but it's like so bad, and I'm like, what's happening?
The Vulture article is so good, and then I think like 17 other media outlets were like, dang it, I wish we had written that. So they were like, okay, let's just kind of like re-articulate it,
but copy and paste parts.
Copy and paste. The Vulture article's Michaela the Destroyer by E. Alex Jung. I literally was gonna pull out that same quote, because I was just like, I love the idea that, yeah, this woman was like, I'm proud of you and you're doing the right thing. Yeah, the article's great. She's so cool.
Yeah, she's
literally
really cool.
My artist too. I was like, oh, I'm going to talk about her again.
I love it. I love it. And then I also wanted to highlight this. She's an up-and-coming musical theater composer and lyricist. I think she's like under 18. I think she's like 16 years old. And she's working on a new historical musical about Marie Antoinette. And it seems really cool. And she's just like trying to get it to Broadway. And I listened to some of the music and it's really good. And she's super talented. And of course I found her on the TikTok, because that's where all 16-year-olds are. But she's been working on this.
That in television. That in television.
Yep. That's where they all are.
They're on the TV.
They skipped everything else.
That's where I want to be. Just kidding. I can't be TikTok. So scary. That interface. Woo!
Yeah, but it seems really cool. And it seems like they've done I believe from her TikTok video, she was saying that they've done like a reading of it at a college, and they've done like different iterations of it. But I just was like, that's so cool. And I mean, my guess is this is a girl who's being very well supported by her parents, who are just like really encouraging her to follow her dreams. That's an assumption, but that I am just making based on the fact that she's 16. But either way, I think she's got something really exciting, and I'm excited to hear more from her.
What's her name?
Oh, what? I didn't say it?
I'm not sure that you did. I didn't want to do one of those questions, those hard-hitting questions.
Those hard, hard-hitting questions. Her name is Abigail Greenwood.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing.
She's so cute.
I have one more artist.
Yeah.
And guess what? Also based off of a New York Times article. Are we being transparent enough about where we're finding our information? But there's just this whole... the article is How a Brooklyn Artist is Making Black Women Her Focus. It's about this woman, Aya Brown. She's 24. The youth. But she has this like series of essential workers. They're these little portraits of all of these different essential workers that she knows, pastel, but they're drawn on brown paper because she's like why should white be like the beginning?
I love that.
Yeah, I really loved that. And it's like her sister is one of the featured essential workers. And this article also just started talking about like centering of Black women as essential workers in this narrative of COVID and just like, you know, generally, but then also the importance of, I mean, we've talked about the importance of representation, but that it was just like having this, like this art committed to them is so important and we need more. And then also there's so little art by Black women in curated spaces in like art museums. And so it's like also kind of calling that out and a push for that. There's this one quote, Tamara P. Carter, a director and writer, a director of the upcoming TV show Freshwater, I thought had this really nice quote at the end. I won't cry, I promise. But it says...
just a little.
And just a little. And this is in regards to Aya Brown's work. Who she's making the art for seems to be just as important as the art itself. Art made with that kind of love and rigor is self-evident and can't be co-opted. So I would implore you to go to her, you can see a lot of them on Instagram. You can see her work at ayabrown.tiff, T-I-F-F. And you can just see all of these drawings. And I think that's awesome.
That is awesome. Well, did we do it?
We did it. Is it a win? Is it a loss?
It seems pretty bad.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad, but I think there are some exciting creators in our world.
And some good awareness, hopefully.
So,
which is probably, I feel like, the beginning of change.
A loss today, but we'll look forward to tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Bye.
All right. That's what we have today. If you're interested in being on the Hysterical Women podcast, send us a DM and we would love to have you.
We'd love to hear from you. More voices in the conversation can only be good.
Thanks for listening.
If you listened.
If you like the pod, hit subscribe and leave us a review.
Also, if you have a macro event that you'd like us to cover, slide into our DMs on Instagram @hystericalwomen.